I think we, as human beings, we have those three basic needs: to be seen, to be heard, and to matter. And I think we can get to this stage of our life and realize that there's that spiritual shaped hole within us that we've been trying to fill with our busy schedules, our relationships, all these external things. And then you're like, hang on a minute, why are those things not making me happy anymore?
Welcome to the Inspired Living with Autoimmunity podcast, the podcast for high achievers who want to stay sharp, focused, and full of energy despite their diagnosis. With your host, National Board Certified Functional Medicine Health Coach, Julie Michelson, where Julie helps you take your power back from autoimmunity. And now here's your host, Julie Michelson.
Welcome back to the Inspired Living with Autoimmunity podcast. I'm your host, Julie Michelson. And today we are joined by Claire and James Davis, the husband and wife team behind the multi-award-winning well-being company, 38 Degrees North, and thriving midlife coaching business, The Midlife Mentors. And they also co-host the Midlife Mentors podcast. Their passion is helping midlifers achieve the body, mind, and lifestyle they deserve. In today's conversation, we're talking about the common challenges for midlifers and how we can shift from feeling stuck and alone to making midlife the best time. Claire and James, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, Hi. Thank you for having us. Hello.
Glad to be here.
I'm so excited. We've already been laughing because now I have a glow. We've already been giggling. This is going to be such a fun conversation. And, you know, as a 54-year-old, 55 next month, what you guys are doing is so important and so needed. But I love talking about learning a little more. How did you guys become the Midlife Mentors?
Do you want to start, Mr. D?
Yes. So I guess it started when I, back in 2011, left London to move to Ibiza, which is a small island in the Mediterranean. With the idea of setting up kind of wellness retreats, fitness retreats, but changing the model that was around. In those days, it was kind of like, we'll take people away, we'll feed them beans and rice and work them out really hard so they lose loads of weight. And I was like, yeah, let's actually get people away, put them in really great five-star hotels. They got spa, luxury treatments. Yes, we'll have healthy food, but also, you know, if they want to go and have a cocktail, that's fine too. And we'll really focus on giving them the tools that will empower them. So my background originally was like psychology.
Okay.
So, you know, what your beliefs are holding you back, you know, let's coach them on nutrition, all these things. So you're going away with a complete set of tools. And grew that business. Then Claire and I got together. And I think as we aged and hit that, so I'm 51 now, we start to see so many of our friends be like, oh, you know, midlife, it's the beginning of the end. I've just got to accept expanding waistline, low energy levels, libido shot, all the rest of it. I'm like, no, listen, it doesn't have to be this way. Like, there's so much we can be doing with lifestyle adjustments to make it the best time of your life, you know? So we started our podcast in 2019, which was just us kind of talking about anything, midlife, health, and happiness, then getting guests on. And then off the back of that, we started to run a program that we take people through. So we've got an 8-week program we take people through called the Midlife Reset. That's really about mind, body, soul. So a full holistic approach, you know, because we're interconnected beings. People don't realize, you know, what we eat will have a direct effect on our mood and vice versa. So that's really where we are. That story of how we started the Mentors. It started as a podcast just from a kind of seeing a need amongst, I guess, our peer group. And then,
sure.
And then from there.
I love that. There is such a need, and you're right. I hear it too, even outside of course, people coming to work with me, you know, usually have had autoimmune conditions for a long time. And so they already have a little bit of that wah, wah attitude. But even you're right, among my healthy friends, it's like, no, there are choices. We can do this differently.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think it's so important in today's age as well. So I don't know, like over here in the UK, we just had some new health figures. So I think the population of the UK is around 66, 67 million. Now 7 million are obese and 16.8 are classed as overweight. I mean, we have a real epidemic problem. I mean, of course, that's across all age groups.
Trying to catch up with the US.
Yeah, yes, right.
But,
sad. I know it's sad because it's preventable, right? With some easy lifestyle adjustments. If we get to midlife and we're carrying like a lot of excess weight, of course, that's going to negatively impact our physical health, but it's going to have an impact on our psychological health as well. It's going to interrupt, you know, our hormone pathways, all the rest of it, all the stuff, you know. And I think it's just showing people that there are things you can do that don't involve like a complete change in lifestyle and, you know, going away and just eating quinoa and drinking water. You know, it's possible to have balance and joy in your life and be healthy.
Ah, I love that. That's so what I want to talk about, this idea of joy, because it breaks my heart. I could not agree with you more. We are whole humans, right? People come to me and they're like, just tell me what to eat to feel better. And I'm like, oh, warning, we have so much more work to do than that. Yeah. But I find, and do you think this is a kind of a midlife issue, this lack of joy? I ask my clients, what do you do for joy? And they glaze over.
Yeah.
Like it's so far in the past, they don't even remember. And these are people that, you know, they're not even old. Like, is that a really a common midlife challenge?
Absolutely. It's the one I suppose that we find like the saddest, really, because it's almost like we need to learn how to be happy again. It's almost like it's a skill that we've lost. And a habit, like happiness actually needs to start becoming a habit almost, because I think we've had layers and layers of like disappointment, loss, grief, betrayal, all these things. And so, you know, as we know, like our subconscious mind goes into like a protective mode and we shut down certain emotions because we don't want to feel that pain,
right?
That disappointment, whatever. Yeah, like we protect ourselves. But we can't kind of shut out emotions necessarily in isolation. And what seems to happen is that we shut out our ability to be happy and feel and experience joy. And there's a lot entangled in that, like a lack of self-belief, a fear of failure. You know, I don't even want to go out and see what I might like that gives me an experience of joy. You're trying something new, meeting new people, have, you know, new hobbies and things that might give me joy, because what if that doesn't work? Disappointment. What if I failed at it and I look stupid? So it's, we see this all the time, that people have forgotten how to experience joy, even what that even looks like. You've hit the nail completely on the head.
Yeah. And I'm with you. It is, to me, it is the most heartbreaking state, really. But the good news is, I love that you use the words, you know, habit and skill, because yeah, I remember one of my sons when he was little, he had the tendency to run toward the negative, just his natural emotional clock. And I used to say to him, not even, I didn't know anything back then, but, you know, sometimes good things would come out of my mouth. And I would say, you know, it's a choice. You can wake up today and say, it's going to be a good day. You know, we can make that choice. And I love that we do, it's not a conscious decision to close ourselves off. And it always comes from something that served us once or at a time that no longer serves us. And sometimes you must see this a lot too. It's really just that I've been taking care of everybody else for so long that I just forget. Like, I don't know. I haven't done anything for me in a really long time.
And it's frightening. It can actually be quite frightening. So actually, when you're asked that question, what brings you joy? It's almost like, because you have prioritized everyone else and everything else above yourself, it's almost like, well, what, it's almost frightening to your own self-identity, because we've put so many values on maybe our career, being a parent, being a partner, you know, all of these identities. And then when we do get to this stage in life, our value shift from what we had in our 20s and 30s, our values very, very much shift, what we deem as important shifts. And so I think also our sense of self-identity can shift as well. And that, but we find that frightening. What we used to experience joy from doesn't necessarily light us up anymore because our values have changed. And then what am I? What am I? Who am I? And some people don't even want to tackle those questions. Like they'll just keep going into default behaviors to escape even thinking about these big questions. That's where kind of like addictions happen and, you know, emotional eating, all that kind of stuff.
It's so true. I could even feel the weight of that. And I'm so blessed. I have so much joy in my life. Yeah. But there is this weight of, we, again, it's choice, right? We can get overwhelmed by this opportunity of like, I know I'm not that person anymore. Who am I? Who do I want to be? Can be overwhelming, but it can also be exciting.
Yes.
And in my experience, you know, combined with, I used to be really ill. So my 30s, my 40s, you know, I didn't think I'd live to see my 50s. Physically, spiritually, emotionally, all the things, I'm so much healthier now than I was back then, which also includes I have joy in my days, in my weeks, in my life. But so there's this choice of, you know, ooh, but it's a big thing when you have that moment and you realize, I don't even know who I am. I see it a lot with women. So James, I'm going to ask you, not personally, I can tell, I know where you are. You're in this good, happy, healthy space. Do men, because I know with women, you know, often they've, you know, put careers aside, they're home, they're raising kids. We all have different stories or reasons, right? But so much that taking care of the family is a part of lost identity. But I'm guessing men have it too, because so many are working jobs to work jobs and they're not fulfilling their passions.
Absolutely. You know, I think we underestimate just the magnitude of the transition at midlife. You know, a lot of elements coming together all at once. We have obviously hormones. You know, women are going through the perimenopause, the menopause. Men might be starting to feel the effects of low testosterone now. On top of that, you know, we've got career struggles. Maybe our kids are like reaching that point where they're leaving home, but now our parents are like getting more frail. All these things. I think for men, it's interesting. The men that I work with, I kind of fall in one of two ways. One is like, I think at midlife, it's a natural time to reflect and look back. And it's like, oh, sure. It's not what I imagined. It's like, I haven't got where I wanted to. And you start thinking about the missed opportunity. It can be easy to fall into that backwards thinking about I've somehow failed, which can again lead to that crisis in identity. On the other end, but actually the end result's the same. You've got people who have strived, you know, and materially maybe they have it all. And they're just like, I don't even want this. I've spent all these years working for this stuff and it doesn't make me happy. And I feel distant from my wife and my family because I've put all my hours into work. So I think men in particular, their identity can become very wrapped up in their job, in their career. And I'd say a big difference between the genders is men tend to internalize it a lot. So it's this thing of like, I'm just going to keep it quiet. I don't want to talk about it. Whereas I think women are a lot more open about kind of talking about their feelings, their emotions, and having that support network around them, which I think can be lacking for men.
So true. And again, but both, you reach this point and there's that, I'd hate to use the word, I'll say identity question. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a crisis, but yeah. Question on both sides that can be really overwhelming.
Yeah. And a lot of the time we have quite a lot of couples do our programs or come to our retreats and things. And actually part of what we talk to people about is that communication in relationships, because we have got, these are really, really pivotal transitional points in our life. Mm-hmm. And actually communicating is really, really important, because the woman is going through all these hormonal changes. The man is going through all these hormonal changes, which affects obviously physical, emotional, and mental well-being. And actually it's an educational piece we do. And we also go into organizations like corporates and talk to men and women about this in the workplace. But actually we realize that it really benefits them from going home and understanding like their partners, right? Because you're like, oh, okay, I'm feeling like this. You're maybe feeling like this, or opening up those channels of communication, because we understand we're empowered with information. And a lot of the time we can feel very alone Yes. We feel very, very isolated, very isolated. Even if we've got our children around us, we've got our partners around us, we still feel very, very isolated. So being able to understand that even your partner might be going through this, that, and the other, you know, hopefully with some of the tools that we give them brings that communication into the open a little bit more.
I love that. That's so important. I was thinking about, yes, men tend to internalize and they're not going to talk about, you know, oh my gosh, you know, what you're going through hormonally is, you know, hurting me emotionally. I'm thinking of a client I have and his wife is, she's like perimenopause, but things are shifting a little bit. And if they didn't talk about it, which they didn't for a little bit. And then finally she came to him and said, look, this is what's going on in my body. He was taking her changes personally because he could feel the shift in the relationship. And he was thinking, I must be doing something wrong. You know, she's just not that into me anymore. you know, what's going on?
Yeah.
And most men, you're right, aren't going to sit their wife down and say, hey, you know, and you have to be careful, to be frank, with a woman whose hormones are changing, what you say to her and how you address it, right?
Exactly. Well, we talk a lot about libido as well. And that's a natural thing for both men and women. But again, I think men particularly, it's interesting, isn't it? Because as a woman, I can see how like that really affects us. But for men, like a lot of their identity, talking about identity again, their masculinity is wrapped up in their sexuality. More I would say than us women. So again, talking about that, because they don't really talk anyway, talking about that is even harder, you know, talking about libido, sexuality, all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, it can be a melting pot, but hopefully the more conversations we have like this help people navigate those conversations a little bit better.
Yeah, and even just or start a conversation.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but I love that you're working with, you know, often with couples together because I, you know, we see it even at the clinic with, you know, supporting hormones. It's like, well, if one part of the couple is getting supported and one part's not, we're out of balance, right? That does not make things better.
What's that going to look like?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Often, you know, the men tend to like it when the women are being supported in general. But these days, I mean, testosterone levels are really challenged, even in younger men.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've got a crisis. I think I'm right in saying that sperm count in the Western world is decreasing all the time, as is like fertility levels of that sperm. Testosterone levels are lower. You know, I read some research, you know, like if you took 20-year-old man from today and a 20-year-old man from 100 years ago, like the 100 year ago, testosterone would be way higher.
Yes.
So this is a problem of, you know, a lot of pollutants in our environment, chemicals, potentially more estrogen from use of, you know, oral contraceptives, in getting into our water supplies, the foods we're eating as well, you know, ultra processed foods, all these having effect on hormone pathways. It's a sticky one because if we know that testosterone is going to decline with age anyway for men, if the starting point is getting lower and lower, then there's a problem coming down the line for sure. And I think we're seeing that. I think I'm right in saying across the Western world, like fertility rates are falling generally, and people are finding it harder and harder to conceive.
Absolutely, and you know, at least over here, one of the added troubles to that, and we're talking about a little bit younger population, but when couples are having fertility challenges, you know, unless they've had, you know, many miscarriages, many losses, things like that, it takes a really long time for any physician to even say, let's check the man, right? Like this process of, but it really does lead to, when we get to midlife, testosterone levels are, I've had a couple of male clients that when I first met them, and they were good sports because I don't have a good filter. You know, they had lower testosterone and higher estrogen than me.
Wow. Yeah.
Like, wow. How do they even get out of bed in the morning, yeah. You know? And it's just for all those reasons that you said, between the toxins, the food system, the estrogens. I mean, and then with the obesity epidemic,
yes.
Then our fat cells are making estrogens. Like, it's just working against us. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the physical. I want to kind of shift back to spiritual, emotional, psychological, because I think that, again, it's all about empowerment, right? And you guys aren't just saying, here's a really common problem. You have solutions. You help people, you know, shift their mindset and step into this place where we are, which is midlife, can be the best time of life.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think anything that James and I ever do, ever have done or ever will do together has to have that element of spirituality, actually, because I think we, as human beings, we have those three basic needs: to be seen, to be heard, and to matter. Like, that we want to be seen, we want to be heard, we want to be important, we want to matter. And I think we can get to this stage of our life and realize that there's that, you know, spiritual shaped hole within us that we've been trying to fill with our busy schedules, our relationships, all these external things. And then, you know, in our experience, and this happened to me as well, you get to a certain point, you're like, hang on a minute, I need to ask what's really, really going on here. Like, why are those things not making me happy anymore? Like, there's something I'm missing internally, like that joy, that happiness, that peace, that gratitude, that contentment that I need to find within myself rather than outwardly facing all the time. And so it's even about having those conversations, that they're completely okay, that that's completely normal. But also that mindset piece, you know, James and I have both had like that psychology background, and helping people understand that their personality, their beliefs, their behaviors aren't fixed. You know, we have neural pathways that can be reprogrammed. We can build new neural pathways. We can actually take our thoughts. We can be curious. We can hold them captive. We can be curious about those thoughts, right, and work out what we would like to think instead. And it's about having the daily tools and the daily strategies, really, to be able to empower people to do that. I think that's so important.
I love that you said that. That's always my, you know, again, back to the disclaimer of, like, we're not just going to be talking about what you think we're going to be talking about. Because people don't even notice their thoughts. So I love that you're saying, no, actually, we can hold them. We can get curious and we can decide.
Yes.
Change.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's being aware of it. Because I think, you know, people reach this midlife, and if they're not really aware of what's going on, it's easy just to be like, I just feel stuck. Like, I don't even know what's going on. And that can be a very disempowering place. But once you can actually step back and go, oh, you know what? Actually, you're right. My beliefs, my thoughts aren't real things. They're merely constructs, and I have the power to change them. I can decide, like, you know, you said to your son, I can decide to get up. Today is going to be a good day, not a bad day. And you can go in with that energy for the day. Mm. It's showing people how they can just make these small multiple tweaks. Because I think this is the thing, right? Everyone's going, what's that one big thing that's going to change everything? What's that?
Well, that's the magic pill mentality we've all been trained to look for, right?
Yes.
It's not. It's actually like a culmination of lots of small changes, right? Change that habit about your thinking. Get up and do your gratitude list. Just start to eat a little bit more healthily. Over time, those incremental changes will really stack up to a big transformation.
Mm.
I love that. I have to ask, because I'm so curious, even though I just said, you know, it's not all about the food. It's not all about any one piece, again, because we are just integrated, beautiful beings. Let's talk a minute about food. I know, you know, you guys have been in the health space a long time, but as it relates to kind of mood and mindset, are there foods that you feel people should be avoiding or should be including?
Yeah, 100%. I'll give you that. The first one, the thing we should be avoiding is sugar. And obviously we don't mean natural sugars, but, you know, all the processed food that we have with all the sugar in it, we know that That causes inflammation in the gut. Our gut is linked to how we feel. It's our mood. It's where our serotonin. Exactly. It's
our brain.
So gut health is so linked to our brain and how we feel. We know that sugar creates inflammation in the body, in the brain. And we know it affects the hormone pathway. We know that actually it causes all sorts of illnesses, issues, autoimmune, it affects autoimmune disease. It's
Alzheimer's. I mean, name it. There is not a chronic condition out there that doesn't get impacted.
Exactly. And we were all so obsessed with fat, so obsessed with fat in the 70s and 80s, you know, but actually what we should have really been looking at for all this time is sugar in our diet. So it absolutely does relate to our ability to change our mental resilience. You know, if we're stuffing our faces full of sugar, we are not going to be able to cope with stress. It increases, obviously, cortisol as well. Our stress hormone has a negative impact on that. So we're not going to be able to mentally cope with the life's challenges if we're eating too much sugar and we're drinking too much alcohol.
Yeah, I would say the other food, of course, like, and it's becoming more and more prevalent in our food chain, is ultra processed foods. I was reading some new research just this morning. I might get the numbers slightly wrong on this, but I think it was a survey of like 10 million respondents, and they identified 32 different negative health impacts of ultra processed foods. So, you know,
at least
these are foods that have gone through, you know, multiple processes, have lots
they're
of
not,
clinical.
Yeah. They're not foods anymore. No.
Yeah,
you know, when we talk like foods and toxins, and unless you're eating whole real food, like you can't even separate the two, because you put some of that junk in your body and your body is literally thinking it's fighting toxins. It doesn't identify it as food.
Exactly, but people are unaware, right? They just see a new thing on the shelf in the supermarket and they're like, oh, great. Oh, that was very tasty. I only meant to have one, but I ate three. I'll get that next week.
Because
as well.
They intentionally chemically make it addictive. So you'll eat more.
Exactly. Yeah. Like sugar, you know, the stuff with sugar, we're just going to keep eating it. We're going to keep eating it. And, you know, when we're stressed, we're going to reach for more sugar, because we want that dopamine hit. And it's just this really, really vicious cycle. So one of the first things we say, obviously, when people are low and they're low mood, I'm like, obviously, we haven't talked about this. Move your body in whatever way you can. It doesn't mean to say you have to go for a run. We're not going to ask you to go to a spin class. We're not going to ask, just go for a walk around the block. Get connected to your body, but also look at your nutrition. Because exercise and nutrition are the most, I think, two overlooked things with how we feel, like our our emotions, like how anxious we are, how depressed we are. Yeah. So food and exercise are absolutely imperative pieces of the puzzle if we're feeling low at midlife.
Well, and circling back, and then I'm going to highlight the wonderful language you just used. but circling back up for half a second to alcohol, is a depressant. And so people don't think of it that way. You know, again, it may feel good in the moment, but if you're already low, that is not going to help. That's going to dig you further in the hole.
Well, it's so interesting. It's so, I think, culturally ingrained, right? If you watch any movie or TV show, it's like, oh, you know, or something bad's happened. Let's have a drink to kind of go, oh, we're celebrating.
Right.
Let's have a drink. That message is hammered continuously, you know. And we know human beings, we're basically dopamine addicts. We're always chasing the next dopamine. Sure. And alcohol gives you that short hit, then you're right. Complete depressant. And people are like, oh, you know, I have a glass of wine at night to help me sleep. It's not helping you sleep. It's giving you interrupted sleep.
Right.
You know, educate people on this. They can understand. But when people don't know, that you don't know what you don't know. So it's about giving people the tools to make these changes for themselves.
Poor, I would say, because I mean, I have massive bouts of alcohol free. I'm alcohol free again at the moment. And I've never drunk a lot. But what I was finding, I started going alcohol free and like really reducing my alcohol about 3 years ago, because I was having definite hormone shifts. And I was finding when I was drinking alcohol the next morning, I was really low, but like noticeably anxious or low. And I was
anxiety.
And so I had this feeling, like, hang on a minute, this is not good for my mental health. my spiritual health, you know, like being able to connect with joy, actually, like that became a blocker for me. So I really, really reduced my alcohol intake, and it's made a massive, massive difference to my life. Huge.
Well, and I love that. But the big cue is you were listening to your body, right? Like that's the key is, and it, you were already living this beautifully healthy lifestyle. So when we've got, and when we're eating ultra processed foods, when we're eating a lot of sugar, when we're not sleeping well, when we're drinking alcohol, sometimes you can't necessarily feel any impact that one or the other is having. Yeah. So I just want listeners to be like, well, I don't feel that. Well, it could be because, you know, when we have so many inflammatory inputs, it's hard to discern. But that first step is just like with your thoughts, is listening to your body. So, and I do want to circle back and commend you for using the word move and movement, because I am just like you. I support, you know, people think, oh, I have to do CrossFit or I have to, you know, run a triathlon or no. And most listeners that, you know, really shouldn't be doing any of those things right now. That's not how we start. Just move.
Some movement. And here's the thing as well. We have to remember, I always get really hung up on the cultural history of where we're at. You know, 250, 300 years ago, we're only just having the agricultural revolution. Before that, you know, we lived in small communities. We're very close. We're probably like working the majority of the time on our feet. Even post-agricultural revolution, that allowed enough food to be available from less people. So people go to the cities for the industrial revolution. Still, you know, it's probably only recently in the last less than 50 years that the majority of people aren't doing hard manual work all day long. We've shifted to a sedentary lifestyle, but our bodies aren't adapted for that. We're designed to be up and moving for most of the hours of the day, not like just sat down in a chair.
Mm. And so, yeah, I think that's something that we really help our clients with, is actually helping them realize that it's not, it doesn't, you don't need to go to a gym. You don't have to lift heavy weights. You don't have to like do CrossFit or crazy things like that. It's actually just becoming aware of your body and getting those endorphins, those like, let's move into our body. Let's reconnect with our body and get the benefits, not just physically, but mentally as well.
I love that. And if you can move outside, you know, then you're stacking. Right. You're just getting, but I do, we joke. So I'm an equestrian. I have horses at home and we joke that that's the original CrossFit. You know, you're moving hay, but you're always doing something.
Really active, and I
notice that the days where I'm working from home, I get just naturally without thinking about it, more steps because I'm, you know, running out to throw lunch for the, I'm just on the property doing things in between work versus the days that I work at the clinic. It's like, oh, I better move my body when I get home because I wasn't moving enough today.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's so incredible. So back again to spirituality, mindset, any of the non, because listeners, you know, they've heard the things before. They know, you know, healthy foods and, but it again, I wanted to touch on it anyway and see your approach because it is important that we remember we can't just take care of one of these aspects.
No.
Where does somebody start? And maybe somebody, you know, if you have advice for someone who maybe isn't, you know, isn't in a relationship, either, you know, something that would work in a relationship or not, if they're like, well, this is me, you know, I don't have the joy. I thought that was just because I've been sick, but maybe it's not. Maybe it is because I don't know who I am anymore. Where do you have people start?
Do you want me to? I mean, I would say, honestly, it's about, well, first of all, I think it is so, so important. It's the most important thing is to be in a container or a community of like-minded people. So actually have support, get support, reach out. And I don't mean necessarily paid. I mean, like there are groups, there are buddies that we can hook up with, all of that kind of stuff that are with like-minded people. But having that connection with people that have actually got some experience in this area or you know, either a coach or mentor. I think being in community, because we feel so isolated in those feelings,
right,
and we can feel so alone, actually being with other midlifers, for example, is really inspiring, because a lot of the time we don't believe change is possible for ourselves. But once we can see it in other people, we think, hang on a minute, they model it for us. So I think that's where we'd start. But honestly, I would say, If we are feeling really, really stuck in our lives, I do think moving our body a little bit, I honestly would say, like, respecting our body by just moving it a little bit better, fueling it better. Because I've been in this position before myself, where I was doing like all the spirituality stuff, I was doing all the mindset stuff, but I was treating my body like junk. So actually being able to make small incremental steps to moving your body, getting your nutrition a little bit more under control, and actually even like just starting a gratitude list, mm-hmm, or just start thinking about what you do have rather than what you don't have, getting off your phone, stop scrolling through social media and comparing yourself to everyone else, you know, maybe try a new hobby or something like that, but just don't think that we have to go, you know, hell for leather and change loads and loads of things. It could be just adding a walk in to your day and adding more water into your day, but doing things in incremental steps, that will start opening up. So if you're like, oh, I don't know who I am, I don't know what I want, rather than tackling that question head on and getting really obsessed with it, just start looking after yourself in other areas first, because that's going to open up that self-respect and that self-love, actually. Yeah. When we look after ourselves and the body that we've been given, naturally we start to enjoy ourselves a little bit more. Does that make sense?
It makes huge sense. I'm over here nodding. I'm like, oh, she's sneaky. She's getting you to create new neural pathways, and you're not even actually working on that actively, right?
Yeah.
The gratitude journal is huge, I think, for any. I agree. I listeners are pretty familiar with how I approach that. What do you tell people, you know, how to do a gratitude journal? Does it need to be a half hour of free journaling a day?
No, exactly. I think we live in an age. There's so many influence out there, aren't they? Going, oh, this is my morning routine, and it's like it's 8 hours.
Five hours, right?
Yeah. I say it's just really simple. You know, take the time you need to take. But I say it can be done as 5 minutes, right? I think the really important thing is to actually make sure you're feeling that emotion of gratitude.
Feeling it.
I'm really simple. I like three things you're grateful for from yesterday. Three things for you're grateful for in general. So it might be yesterday. It might be like, oh, you know, had a great conversation with the guy at the coffee shop. Saw a lovely sunset. You know, in things in grateful might be like, oh, I've got my health. And then I always finish like by setting an intention for the day. So it's like three things, intention for the day, and that's really simple to do and doesn't take that long. But you know, again, if you do that every day, after 10, 14 days, you'll start to feel a difference in your life for sure.
100%. Yeah. And it is about that feeling. So people just go, oh, I'll just do a gratitude list. And they're like, why aren't I getting anything from this? You're writing my children. Okay. Yeah. But what is it about your children? How do you feel about that when you think about them right now?
This goes back to the very beginning of the conversation of out of protection over time, we close off.
Yes.
Yeah. And the healing comes from the feeling. It just does. It really does. So I'm so excited that you made sure to highlight that, you know, it's not just writing, and it doesn't have to be, I'm guessing you guys see the same thing. Almost every client, no, I'm going to say every client that comes through my doors is a perfectionist in some way, shape,
or form. I knew you were going to say that. Perfectionist. Yeah.
And exactly. You know, so I want to say it doesn't need to be your deepest conversation with God. It doesn't need to be the things that you are the most, it could be, you know, I saw a beautiful flower or a butterfly pass me. Whatever sparked you, and you can just get back to that feeling. That's the key. And I wanted to add that because it's always really interesting to me how being a perfectionist can block you from just doing the thing.
100%.
I would say, I just want to add to that. It's a really good point. But also I say, like, then take the opportunity in the day to actually let yourself feel that gratitude. Because we go through the day taking things for granted. Someone's like smiles and says hello to you in the street that you don't really know. They're like, hi, or morning. Yeah. Okay. But if you go, if you let yourself feel the gratitude for them having said that, even the smallest things, and you continually do that through the day, that will make a difference as well. Well, it's about allowing yourself to experience
it. It's the red car theory, isn't it? You know, if you see, I always say gratitude is like a red car theory. So if you say, notice all the red cars, all of a sudden, all you can see is red cars.
Right.
If you're actually grateful and you start looking for things to be grateful for, the more you see. It's energetically that you start building up this energy of gratitude where you see more things. It's the manifestation, basically, more things to be grateful for. And it's so beautiful when that happens.
It really is. And to go back to one small step at a time, starting with the journal and feeling when you're writing in the journal will naturally lead to what James was saying about taking that half a moment to actually feel it throughout the day, because that is the red car theory. It just, you attract what you're putting out and what you're looking for. Yeah. And so when you're walking around, again, it's about opening your heart.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And it's so lovely when you start noticing those things and you're kind of like, all of a sudden you're like, I can be grateful for that. Or someone walks past and they smile at you and you're grateful for that. And it's all these, it is about opening up your heart and you know, energy attracting like energy. It's
absolutely. And you become that contribution for the other person, right? So then you're smiling at people or you're saying hello first. Because you're there, you're not shut down and just in your head, you're actually experiencing life as we were meant to.
Yes, exactly. Love that.
Oh, I love that. Tell me a little bit more about, and I'm guessing this is why you have a group program, a group program. We talked about the importance of community. And I do want to highlight, it doesn't mean go sit on the couch next to your sad sack friend who's in the same position you are. You want up-leveled community. You want to find the people who are, just rocking midlife.
Yes.
That's who you
elevating.
Want to be. Yes, yes. I was thinking about that before. But tell me, how are you working internationally? How are you guys working with people?
Yeah, so we have our 8-week program called the Midlife Reset, and we have our own app. So it's like basically effectively like having us in your pocket, right? So everything's scheduled in there, but everything's also on demand. So you've got your movement plan, it's 8 weeks nutritional coaching. You've got weekly mindset modules, look at things like, what are your beliefs? How are we going to change those? And then we support that with there's a call every week, which is hot seat coaching. And we do one in the evening UK time, one at lunchtime UK time. So it's catering for different time zones.
But we have people in the US.
Yes, we have people in the Australia. US, people in Australia, people all around Europe. And then we have a private Facebook group that's only for people that are going through or have been through the program where, we're hanging out there all the time. It's where everyone shares any issues, posts their wins, just a great community, shares recipes. Yeah, it's just a great place. So it brings people together in a really nice way. And you have got that touch point with us every week as well, and with other people who are going through the same process. And it's amazing, you get people who are shy and they maybe not, but they'll hear someone ask the question they want to ask and they hear the answer. So and then they open up over time. It's really nice to see that.
It's also about that accountability, because I always find it's accountability. We procrastinate. We are a perfectionist, right?
I have a genetic predisposition to procrastination. I was like, look at that.
Exactly. So
this is why we have a job, right? If the knowledge was enough,
exactly. Exactly that. And I think it can be super overwhelming. There is so much noise out there, so much conflicting information. And actually just having that step-by-step process that we take people through so they don't have to think. They're like, okay, I'm going to trust the process. Because we're too busy to think, actually. We don't want to keep thinking because it's too overwhelming. So just getting in and doing the process and having that schedule, that accountability, because otherwise we're going to make our own excuses all the time.
And they're always good.
Yes. But psychologically, there is something about not wanting to let other people down or not wanting to see that in yourself. So that's why it's so important. Like, we're part of mastermind groups. We have our own coaches and mentors because, you know, they, when you think, oh, I can't be bothered, you're like, actually, someone's checking on me.
They're going to ask. Yeah,
they're going to ask.
And it works.
It works every single time. And then obviously we have our retreats as well where people can come and meet us in person. And a lot of people that have been on our programs, like that have met each other, they all come to our retreats and then they meet each other at our retreats and it's really fun.
So good. Yeah, and
so I was going to say, we do give people an option to work with us like over at 12 months as well. So we like have the 8 weeks as like an intensive, then they sit in the community again, weekly calls, we bring in different experts. And I mean, including that the opportunity to come to like day events with us as well.
So much fun. So good. And if you're listening to this and you're like, wow, that sounds great, but I'm not ready for it, I would say just start listening to their podcast.
Thank you.
Because it's such a, you guys share such great information. And that's a great starting point to just even just start opening up your mind to, you know, how do I even start shifting some of these things?
What we wanted to, like, that's all we wanted to do with the podcast. In 2019, we were just like, let's have fun and let's share our knowledge and hopefully inspire people that, the best is yet to come. Like there is so much hope. We can lose so much, but there is so much hope and there is so much that we can do and can take control of. So thank you for saying that about our podcast. That's really sweet. Yeah,
well, it's a great, it's a great for someone can do it even on the couch. You could do it while you're walking. That would be good.
Yeah, exactly.
But wherever, wherever listeners are, I think that's such an easy step to get to know you more and get inspired, right? That's the reason why this is Inspired Living with Autoimmunity, because we need that inspiration. And so many of us reached a point for one reason, whether it was autoimmunity, midlife, whatever, that we lost hope. And so that's the whole point is, so I love your mission.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So you guys are ready. I'm going to have James answer this one if he's willing. And it's not an easy question, James. You've already given us so many tips and steps and ways to get started. For listeners, what is one step that, so you can repeat, you can pick something different. What's one step they can take starting today to improve their health, whether it's mindset, physical, whatever?
Well, I'm going to give you two, actually. And the first one is actually make that first decision. Make that decision to change it, right? And don't procrastinate. It's easy. You go, oh, okay, that sounds good. Maybe I'll start tomorrow. Then tomorrow comes. It's like, I'll start tomorrow. Make a decision now that I'm starting right now. So that's tip one. Tip two, I'm torn between the gratitude list or the movement. I'm going to go with the gratitude list because I know Claire will come in something. Start the gratitude list because if you're feeling stuck, if you're feeling, life looks bleak, if you've got like anxiety, anxiety and gratitude are opposite emotions. You can't be in gratitude and feeling anxious or afraid. So start with the gratitude list.
I love the I love what you just said about the decision. I think, we don't need to know the whole staircase. It's that whole thing about not needing to know the whole staircase, but just taking the step. And we always ask clients, imagine if you'd have started on your journey 6 months ago, what life would look like now. And imagine what life is going to look like if you don't start on your journey in another 6 months, in another 12 months time. And it gives you laser focus of like, okay, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. That's, sadly, no one can make those decisions for you. That's a responsibility you have in yourself. We have a choice. And so, I love what you said. It's actually about a decision.
Yeah. Tomorrow never comes. So no time like the present. I love that. Great. And I give you the, almost, it's very rare that people say one thing. I said it was a hard question, and it's hard because there's like so much to choose from. So I love that. For people that are listening on the go, where's the best place to find you?
They can go to our website, which is themidlifementors.com. And then from there, they can find our podcast. They can follow us on Instagram or TikTok. TikTok's our biggest channel, which is odd. But yeah, so go to our website and then they can find everything else that they need from there.
Wonderful. James and Claire, you have given us amazing gold today. I so appreciate it.
Oh, we appreciate being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
For everyone listening, remember you can get the transcripts and show notes and all the links to find Claire and James by visiting inspiredliving.show. I hope you had a great time and enjoyed this episode as much as I did. I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Julie Michelson's Inspired Living with Autoimmunity. Did you enjoy this episode? Please like, share, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you'd like to get a transcript of this and every other episode, just head on over to inspiredliving.show or click on the link in this episode's description. There, you can also find everything we discussed in this episode, including links and information about our guests. You can even send in your questions to be answered by Julie in a future episode. That's inspiredliving.show. Until next time, this is Julie Michelson's Inspired Living with Autoimmunity podcast, helping you take your power back.